And we are now live.
Good afternoon, everybody. We are going to wait a few minutes, see if we have any stragglers who are going to come in, probably about 3 minutes, and then we'll get going. Super. Should we have the agenda shared? Is that something that we usually do? I can't remember.
No, I don't typically share in the public meeting because then all of the attendees can't see each other.
Right.
If anybody needs me to send it to you, I'm happy to do that really quickly.
And anybody who doesn't know this, who is on, they are also in the calendar event. That's where you can find them easily before the meetings.
Just FYI, Susan Cox already said that she was not going to be able to make it.
All right, it is 1:03. My first remark as the chair is that I will no longer be your chair following today, because not because I don't want to be, but because I am moving to Benton County. And I'm guessing that that means I should not be sitting on a Lane County committee. So this will be my last meeting and my last time as chair. I'm guessing that something will need to be done about that. And I am not sure what the process will be, but I'm sure that will be figured out.
Hey, Lise, I'm so sorry. I do need you to officially call the meeting to order for the meeting record.
Oh, there we go. Call to order, very at the top. I call this meeting to order. Do we do a roll call or do we just use the tape?
Yes. No, we do need to do a roll call.
Okay. I don't think that I've done that before. So I just read the names and people say here. Okay.
Yes, please.
Elaine yes, Eller Moe. Sorry if I'm mangling your name.
I'm here.
Rihanna Hensley.
I'm here.
Kathy Dusing. Hoover Chambliss, Susan Cox, Don Norden.
I'm here.
Pete Knox.
Here.
Martin Gator.
I am here.
Great. It's a good thing I'm not doing this anymore. Clearly, I still need some coaching. I also had wanted to add something that was sort of had come up on my mind, I very often do not know who is speaking when people come on or what their position is, particularly our speakers who are presenting, but also people who are on the committee, but I don't know what their perspective is, if they're board members, if they're community members, if they're writers, whatever it is. So I think that it would be great if possibly we could do something a little more, try and remember when we're first speaking to do a little intro, maybe your name, all of that appears. So that's the one piece that we might not need, but for people who might not be able to read your name, what your name is, your role, either as a writer or service provider, if you're staff, if you're a board member, so something like that, so that we kind of know who everybody is when they're talking. I think that would be really helpful. And also putting it in visually, but again, that does not make it accessible to everyone. So it would be great to remember to do that. So hello, my name is Lisa Shellman. I am the board chair as of today, and then after, not after. I also wanted to find out if anybody had any announcements or additions to the agenda. And either if you raise your hand with your actual hand, if I can see you, or the little hand raisy thing, that's a great way. Both of those are great ways for me to tell who needs attention. So it looks like we don't have any. Did you want me to read this audience participation piece?
So we actually do not have any community members in our audience. Actually, we do have one. I will just go ahead and read that piece, and then I will hand it back to you.
Great.
To indicate that you would like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button. For those attending via phone only, please press *9 on your phone to raise your hand. When it is your time to speak, your name will be called. For those attending via phone only, the last 4 digits of your phone number will be called. Please state your name, city of residence, and who you are representing for the audio record. Once you have provided testimony, your hand will be lowered. Please do not raise your hand again. Only one opportunity to speak is provided. For those unable or not wanting to speak publicly, testimony may be provided via email at clerk@ltd.org. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per community member. A timer will be displayed on the screen and will beep when the 3 minutes is up. And Lise, I am still not showing anyone indicating they would like to provide testimony, so I will hand it back to you.
Okay, great. I do not see any items for action or items for board recommendation, but we do have some items for information discussion. Are we still in the same order that this shows? Okay, great. So, Cosette, it's up to you.
I'm actually going to hand this off to John, who's prepared to give the presentation on the STIF and STF consolidation in process. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy to. Hello, everyone. I'm John Allen with Accessible Services at Link Transit District. So hello to members of the CATC and those joining today's meeting. Today, I'm going to be providing some updates to the state of Oregon and LTD processes for the allocation of Section 5310 and STF funds, which are used to fund programs that benefit primarily older adults and people with disabilities. So you'll hear me make mention of several different kinds of grants, such as STF, STIF, and 5310 funds. It can get a little confusing, and I'm going to do my best to explain them as I go, and we're going to have plenty of time at the end for questions. One important thing that's true about all of these grants is that they operate on a biennial cycle, meaning we reapply and reallocate these funds every 2 years. So the current biennium is going to be completed at the end of June of 2023. And so we're beginning our initial preparations for the next biennium that's going to begin in July 1st of next year. So the one thing that's simple about our grants is that they're all aligned on the same calendar. Probably the easiest way to categorize our grants is that they either originate from federal funding or State of Oregon funds. And the grants that use numbers, such as you'll hear me mention things like Section 5310 or Section 5311 funds, all originate from a federal source. Our grants that use acronyms of letters, such as SDF or STIF, all originate from a state source. This is important for us because state and federal grants have different requirements and regulations that apply. Every 2 years, we do an update on the use of these funds, which even for people who have served on CATC for the use of these grants in the past, is just enough time for us all to need a refresher. So there's also going to be a new wrinkle in the use of STF funds. We'll get into detail in a moment. In the more distant past, LTD utilized a subcommittee of this group, which we called the Accessible Transportation Committee back then, to make recommendations on how those funds were allocated, which then went to the board of directors at LTD for approval. More recently, the board of directors created an STF committee as a direct committee of the board rather than a subcommittee of the CATC to make those same recommendations. And then currently, we're looking to revise this process again as STF funds have been consolidated into the similarly named STIF or STIF funds, as noted in the attached report in your packets. So our current grant biennium is the last time STF funds will exist as we currently know them, as the program is getting folded into the STIF funds for the next biennium. Because of this, LTD is anticipating needing to make some housekeeping and process changes to be able to accommodate the shift from STF funds into the STIF umbrella, and which falls under different OARs or Oregon and administrative rules. So we'll need to make sure that we update our documents and processes accordingly. Historically, STF funds have been used as a match for federal funds, such as Section 5310 funds. Like many federal funds, Section 5310 funds come with a match requirement, meaning for every dollar of federal funding that we receive, a certain percentage of non-federal funding needs to be put up by the receiving agency, or us in this case, to demonstrate that these programs are a true partnership. Since STF funds are state and not federal funds, these have been a great source historically for us to meet this match requirement. We've typically in the past used a solicitation process to allocate the use of these grant funds, meaning we ask local nonprofits and service providers to propose projects, and based on the funds available, we try to prioritize transportation programs that benefit older adults and people with disabilities in our community. So when prioritizing projects for funding, we've looked to representatives of the disability community, advocacy groups, and transportation providers to help us make recommendations. These recommendations are guided by what's called the Lane Coordinated Plan, which sets three tiers of funding availability. So the highest tier, or projects that are most likely to get funded, are existing transportation projects. So for example, we've partnered with Alternative Work Concepts to provide travel training, and we've done this for many years with the local nonprofit. And we would typically look to renew or continue that program whenever possible and funding permits. The second tier, or projects that we look to promote funding for once all the existing projects are funded. And these are requests to expand existing programs. So for example, if our travel trainers came to us with a proposal to expand our service area or increase the number of travel trainers that we have, we would consider that once we've secured funding for all of our core services first. Then we have a third and final tier, which are new and innovative projects that we've never done before. So when we've fully funded all of our core programs, we've considered expansions for all of those programs. If there's additional funding available, we consider incorporating brand new programs as funding permits. And once all the applications from the solicitation process have been received and reviewed, typically we look for final recommendations from a constituency group made up of representatives of older adults and people with disabilities before then going to our board of directors for final approval. So here today, I'm just here to report that LTD is currently reviewing the process and will be making changes to reflect the update of STF funds being rolled into the STIF process. This is going to require revisions to two of the guiding documents for this process. One is called the Project Management Plan, or PMP, which details LTD's roles and responsibilities for the use of 5310 funds. and the other is the Lane Coordinated Transportation Plan, which is what set those tiers of funding priorities I was talking about earlier. We aren't really expecting any substantive changes to those tiers or priorities, but we do need to update the documents to reflect both all the new programs that have implemented from the last biennium and some housekeeping changes, which is going to reflect the changing nature of the STF funds. So we're going to keep this group updated on our progress. So this is just the first time we'll be introducing these grants to the committee. So please don't feel like you have to have everything memorized. We're going to be revisiting this again at some point in the future. I know it's a lot of information. So if you have any thoughts or questions, I'm holding some time for that right now.
No questions.
That was a very clear explanation of something pretty darn complex. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Okay. If there are no questions, which I do not see any of, the next person who's going to be talking with us is Todd Smith. Hi, Todd. If you could tell us who you are besides your name, which we now all know, and then you know what your role is, et cetera. Thank you. That would be appreciated.
Okay, great. My name's Todd Smith. I'm a project manager in the facilities management department. And I'm here today to give you an overview of an upcoming project, the Eugene Station Modernization Project. This project is a board-approved project in the Community Investment Plan. The project provides essential investment in Eugene Station that provides support to our commitment to create and maintain quality facilities, services, and customer experiences today while preparing for tomorrow. In an overview of this project, I'm going to give you a little bit of the preliminary scope that in our assessment that we've gone through. So scope includes a variety of renovations, upgrades, and repairs located at the site and the buildings of the Eugene Station. And that work generally consists of the renovation of the customer service center for a more efficient and accessible customer engagement. There's upgrades to the site, including wayfinding. We're exploring dynamic displays and real-time signs for bus bays, and even in the customer service center as well. Then there's a renovation of the public restrooms to an all-gender restroom with accessible stalls and added capacity in an open environment that will assist in security, safety, and protect against contagious disease. Inside the building, there's mechanical infrastructure that we need to repair and upgrade. There's also lighting and energy efficient upgrades that we'll be looking at. And on the exterior, there's upgrades to the crosswalk where pavers and concrete are degraded and potential hazards. So that's also part of the project, as well as some exterior to the building, sealing of the brick and preserving the life of that. We are exploring some additional non-revenue generating parking and seeing if there's possible to get that in there. There is safety and security upgrades with cameras, public address, fire alarm system, access controls. So those all are going to be part of that, as well as improving some of the pedestrian circulation, including the plaza and ADA upgrades throughout the site and buildings. The remodel also supports some services such as the operator's lounge, the Next Stop Center. There's some remodels in those spaces, as well as we are looking into any repairs that we need to do on the roofs and canopies. So that's kind of a overview of some of the scope. It's there are some things that are moving one way or another, but you know, we've identified quite a few things with the dollars we have. So the project budget is $5.4 million overall, and that gives us $3.6 million in construction. This project is funded currently out of the bus and bus facility grant, 80% federal, and there's a 20% local match. The preliminary schedule has us, working through this preliminary phase into August and working with the design team at the end of August, early September of this year, and then moving that on through till April 2023, where we would start construction in May of 2023 and complete that in March of 2024. So currently, we have the sponsor program end user champion group, we call Spec Group. And we have a couple of groups there that we're working with and we'll be continuing to work with as soon as we have the meeting scheduled with the architects, which will be soon. That is planned at the end of this month. So we'll end up gathering more information. And we also have the technical advisory committees that we'll be working with on those projects and gathering more information. Pivot Architecture is the approved design team on board for us on this project. And they will be delivering those services as we move forward. And then the second piece of that is because of the active station and the nature of where it is, it's a very tricky site to renovate and make sure that we're accommodating everybody's needs still. So we've solicited for what's called a construction manager general contractor. And that's somebody that we bring in early on and help us with some of that phasing and sequencing to minimize the impact of the construction during, operations. So that is an RFP that is out. We are, it's currently out to the for proposals, and then we'll get that back and look at those and select that, and then they will start working with us as well as the architects on the project, and that will really set the stage for getting things moving forward. So that's kind of the high level overview of the project. Are there any questions on that?
I had a small question. So I use a power wheelchair to get around, and the bathrooms are always difficult. And with these new bathrooms, are you making sure they're accessible to people with disabilities?
Yes, we are working with Pivot Architecture on all of those type of issues so that we can make sure that we're accommodating everything that we need to on the project. And so that input will be taken in and we'll utilize that.
Thank you.
Don?
I'm noticing in the sustainability section of the project information that we want to incorporate environmental considerations into design and engineering and provide, reduce energy loads, efficient energy systems and equipment. And I'm wondering if any of this discussion, or has it possible yet to discuss with the architects and the contractors such that we could add of element of solar collection on the top of all of those transit bays in the roof so that we could actually charge the system with renewable energy and allow local residents to recharge their devices at the bus station. Has there been any discussion or any consideration in this?
Well, on this project, because of the budget limitation, that was not included in the project. We looked at, we're looking at all of, you know, all the sustainable aspects that we can. A solar array is not, however, that is in the other project that we have, the Operation Command Center project. And part of that is this, there's a state requirement, and this project doesn't meet that state requirement. However, the other one does. You know, looking at a solar array, there is still an option. I mean, there's nothing's off the table. So we could go back and explore that. It just means we have to look at, you know, how that would impact the other scopes.
How would that be done? You know, who initiates the discussion and where does that come from? How is it possible to include that in the project? Or if other funding was available, could it be done in concert with this project?
Yes. So the answer to that, the first part, well, I think that would need to be initiated through the directors. You know, there would be some discussion about that. And then as far as looking forward, like I mentioned, the project, it doesn't currently have that funding, but if another source of funds were identified, that is an option too. Or the other option is to cut scope that's already planned. And that's a little difficult because the project doesn't have, you know, a really robust budget. It has stuff to really repair and fix and maintain. It's not into the level of adding new infrastructure, just really improving what's there with energy efficient stuff. Like, for instance, the lighting at the exterior, upgrading those to all LEDs and the mechanical equipment that's within it, you know, upgrading that to more energy efficient. So adding a solar array would be more of a new item that would be, you know, not as much of a renovation and fix and modernization.
Yes, I can understand that. It's clear. I just wonder if there are additional funding, somebody would have to go apply for that funding. There would have to be, you know, the whole grant applications. And right now, you know, we're just passing these budgets at the federal level that are going to funnel all kinds of funding that eventually will come down here. It may take a couple of years, but, you know, at least we have to have the discussion and talk about it and the planning in the meantime. And if we're doing renovations and stuff on the roof or repair, then perhaps just the preparation for doing it could be done within our budget scope. I see Cosette has something to say. I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, so I appreciate the discussion. And first of all, I just want to point out that the facility now is about 25 years old. And I mean, I should age so well. Our station has done a great job of aging, but what we know is how we operate at the Eugene station has changed, how the buses move through the station, how people move through the station, how people utilize the station, the business that we carry on at the station, it's all changed a bit. So the changes that are part of this scope and this project are really to update some, for instance, failing mechanical equipment. So HVAC system and some of the other systems that are failing just by age. You know, I might need a facelift as well, but we do have some systems that are failing. So right now, most of this project is intended to address those failing systems. I do believe, Don, what you're talking about does merit a further conversation. However, I don't believe that there is time. We cannot really put this project off, nor is there budget or scope with this project. But I do think that that merits conversation for a future project. And Don, that would most likely happen as we're having our CIP conversation and as we're having conversations around sustainability and future projects.
Any other questions or comments about what Todd has shared? I don't see anything. Thank you so much, Todd.
All right, thank you, everyone.
And then the next thing is vehicle procurement and securement update from Matt.
Hello, sorry about that. My name is Matt. I'm staff person supporting fleet. So there's always that delay when you get pulled over. So if I missed anything, I apologize in advance, but excited to be here, to be able to present. And I'll just say at the beginning, I am always intimidated to go after a presentation that John has done. So I ask for your guys' grace because the bar is set incredibly high with John and his clarity. That's a stalling tactic as well to pull up a presentation. But just to help me along content, I'm going to pull up just a PDF to help really share some of the things. And so, with what we're doing. And I presented back in April of 2021, just with a quick update of what's happening with our vehicle procurements. And so this is to kind of add to that content. And can you guys see my screen now? I saw a thumbs up. So vehicle procurement and securement updates. So as many of you, if you're engaged, as you guys are engaged, you understand LTD adopted a climate action policy statement from the board of directors. This really identified multiple goals, but the two immediate goals that I want to highlight is that 25 electric buses would be under contract within 3 years. This was adopted a few years back, so just want to report we are on track for that. We actually have 11 electric vehicles that have been in service for over a year, and we're starting to receive delivery of our next order, which is a total of 19, which will get us to 30, exceeding our goal of 25. By 2035, the goal is to have 100% fleet turnover and a phase out of fossil fuels. And then by 2030, a 75% reduction in GHGs or greenhouse gases from our fleet. Our fixed route bus fleet, just as a high level, we have 98 vehicles. 35 of those vehicles are 60-foot fixed route and MX buses. So as my kids like to say, the Caterpillar buses, you have that little articulated joint, which again, we consider Caterpillars in my household. And then we have 63 40-foot fixed route. So of those 40-foot fixed route, the manufacturer, we have 46 Gillig buses and 17 New Flyer buses. Just a makeup of our propulsion type, as you see below, is we have 60% diesel hybrid, 29% diesel, and 11 electric. And then as I kind of mentioned, we are in the process of starting to receive delivery of 19 New Flyer 525 kilowatt hour electric buses. We currently have two on site. And the remaining 19, if all goes well, will be here by the end of this year. As you have all learned through the news, there's some supply chain issues that are occurring. So we're hopeful and crossing our fingers that those 19 will be here by the end of the year. And just, I should have said at the beginning, at any point, anyone wants to interrupt or ask a question, feel free to do that. I see so much value in while presenting, just to not leave a slide if someone has a question. So I won't be monitoring the hands or the raising of the hands, but if someone does have a question, please stop me. So as we go into our electric bus securement, as I said, I presented April of 2021, and these were some of the slides or someone similar of our securement. Our layout has stayed consistent through these bus purchases. So as somebody's entering, they can get familiar with how to enter the vehicle. But there are some updates with securement. One thing LTD has been trying to figure out a solution to stay with consistency has something to do with the wall side securement. And the way we have it, if you are aware of that, this wall side securement allows you just to pull out the belt buckle when it's retracted like this. And that has provided great flexibility for passengers to self-secure if they so choose. And we've been seeing within the industry that the manufacturers of the securement option were getting away from this. And if you're familiar, there's with some of these new ones, if you can see my mouse, they actually have this toggle on the back of it that has a push to release. So there's not an automatic process. You actually have to push to end up releasing that, which has caused some problems, not only for passengers, but also for our operators to try to get back and get the wheelchair or the securement tight enough. Or as someone's leaving to accommodate that. And so this is our existing current electric bus, and this is the layout. So with my mouse, I'll just show on the right-hand side, you have where the wall is, you have a securement that would go on a mobility device. And then on the aisle side, similar thing. And the belt type that the manufacturers has provided, and the one we've chosen to go with for consistency, is they call it a Y belt. And that allows people at the end just to push a button and it releases the belt so someone can leave. During this most recent bus build, the manufacturer of these belts no longer provide the Y style belt for this securement option. And so they came to LTD and just, you know, essentially said, we don't provide this anymore. You have to go with an S style hook. And so on the next slide, you'll see what this S style hook is. And it's not the Y belt that we're familiar with. It actually is the hook that hooks onto to a mobility device to keep it kind of in place. We haven't yet deployed this and trying to figure out, well, how do we continue to maintain for passengers the ability to, you know, self-secure if they want to, while still providing the securement that we need to provide as options. So the seating arrangement, if you're looking at the left photo, is similar, really similar, but on the, as you zoom in, it's the securement options that are different. That is an S hook. Any questions before I move on in regards to that change?
I'm a power wheelchair user, and I'm used to the other segments. I've been riding the bus since I was like 15, but these new hooks, are they just as safe as the other hooks? Because I see that sometimes maybe they could get loose because they're not closed all the way. So just like a worry as like a person who uses a power wheelchair.
Yeah, no, and that's a great question. And I would say that the S hook itself is a pretty deep hook. And so as we're securing that and getting it attached to the mobility device, that We just need to ensure, that it is tight there. And I do believe the manufacturer, as they're going away from that Y-belt, would have deemed this safer for passengers. So that's a great question.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question. And so I guess one thing else I will point out, as I get to a later slide, we'll communicate that we want feedback from passengers, is the way in which this securement, they're on the inside of those posts. If I go to the left photo, you see two posts, which is what secures it to the floor. And those are on the inside of those posts. So one thing we've tried is with some mobility devices we have, it works, but we also want to see if this is the best layout for having these on the inside. We do have the ability to take this securement and put it on the closer to the wall side to see if that widens it for mobility devices to make it easier. So as we'll see in a later slide, we love having people on site. We see value in people rather than, seeing a new bus come on to see and test it out. So there's a level of comfort. And if anything is or needs to be addressed beforehand, we want to do that. So that's a little tickler for you guys to realize we want to do that. I see John has his hand up, so I'll allow John to jump in.
This is great information. Thanks, Matt, for sharing this all with us. I'm wondering, we potentially could try and set up a on-site day where we could have folks be able to test some of these things out. And I just want to check if you've had any experience up to this point, or if we might plan for the future securement of some unusually sized or bariatric mobility devices, things that may not fit kind of the standard mold, how some of these were designed. And then also if on what we might expect as far as the differences from the old to the new system, as far as how independent securement could or would work. So the proportion of people who may have been used to being able to independently secure, who may now face something different if we were to use, say, a hook-based securement.
Yeah, and I think we haven't tested all sizes. And so I think the on-site will allow for additional clarity. And, LTD has a few mobility devices that we test, but I would say that everyone, because it's such a personal thing, the sizing of it really matters to the individual. It's getting people on site to help. I see a lot of value to see if we need to make any types of adjustments. And so before we get something out for these new bus builds, I believe there's so much value in having people who may be in mobility devices that do rider service to come on site. And then I know that LTD has a program, and John, you can speak to this probably better, is there's those some belts or loops that we provide for people to add securement onto their mobility device, which allows for easy access to increase and enhance that. One of the things with our Y belt, and this is something we're trying, if I go back to the previous photo, you see that the wall side securement is really attached to this bungee on the bottom of the seat, which allows somebody to hook on or secure themselves. And so when you go to the hook, it's a little bit different. So we're trying to explore what would be good. One option we've thought about is a magnet. So putting maybe a magnet on this chair to allow for that hook to be magnetized to. So as somebody gets there, they can bring that towards themselves. So we want consistency for passengers. It's one of the decisions really paramount to LTD. But on this particular one, we've reached out to the belt securement manufacturer, and they just don't provide what we've been used to. And again, in the middle of this bus build, they essentially said, you can't get what you're previously, nobody makes that anymore.
It looks like Pete has his hand up.
Yes, thank you very much. Pete, whenever you're ready, ask away.
Yeah, sorry, it took me a second to get unmuted. So what is the changes here for, like, say, mobility scooters, as far as you used to do this sort of strap that went over underneath. Is that still a thing? I don't see the tie downs that are in the floor like they used to have. Is this one system to rule them all? And have you looked at how mobility scooters work with this setup?
Yeah, it's actually the same. I didn't focus in on that, Pete, but good question. So I'm going to try to zoom in here to see, but on the floor, you see this eye hook, which are similar to what we have on our electric buses. And then where the image is cut off, which is you can't see, there's that same style scooter strap. So consistent with that, but just different as far as the rear kind of straps.
Okay.
Great question.
Thanks.
Let me just say it looks a little bit different. If you ever look on the floor, and now instead of just one attachment point, you have three potential attachment points on the floor. So that was something the manufacturer changed as well. And that just gives a little bit flexibility, you know, half of an inch in between for play to make that easier.
And John has his hand up.
Thanks. I just didn't want to miss the opportunity to make a public plug that we will offer securement straps to free of charge to any members of the public who use a mobility device that want to stop by our customer service center at Eugene Station. So for users of wheelchairs, power chairs, scooters, similar mobility devices, we can safely and securely attach nylon webbing, which makes for a much quicker securement experience, whether someone's either independently securing or an operator securing. And oftentimes folks may even get a referral from one of our bus operators. So these aren't a requirement to ride, but they often can greatly speed up the process of boarding and getting secured with a mobility device. So anyone can just stop by Eugene Station and free of charge. We'd be happy to install those. All of our accessible and customer service team is trained on how to install those in a safe manner just to speed up the boarding process.
Brianna.
Are these new straps going to be on the EMX and ride source?
They are currently just going to be on the 19 electric buses that we have. As we do see failures on some of these, we actually will need to replace them. And we have a little bit of stock to help out, but it will not be on our MX buses. Our MX buses, as many are aware, has that rear facing. So there's no changes to our MX.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right, I have three more slides to jump in. So if no one has any additional questions, I will go forward. Not seeing a hand, I'll jump to the next one. And this is just, as you're seeing, or as we're going to be seeing the new electric buses, the driver's door is just a little bit different than what you're familiar with. And so here's our current driver's door. It's really a see-through through the whole entire thing. And the new ones, it's like a half black looking with the glazing through that. So as you're approaching or entering a new electric bus, you'll see that being different. It does seem from all the mobility devices we have, we can get wheelchairs through that. But I think it'll be a good testimony to see larger, to John, your question, larger maybe wheelchairs to figure out how to navigate and how to approach this. It does meet all the safety standards. These driver doors are throughout all of the industry. And it's just going to be a little bit different as you're entering in with the mobility device. So I did want to highlight that as well. And then last slide, more for discussion and questions is, again, I enjoy hosting people at our campus, and there's so much value in that. So reach out to myself or to John, anyone at customer service, if you want an on-site visit and really to see what's going on within our agency. I got John and Don. So John, jump in.
Sure. So this is going to be an especially challenging time, I think, both for us as a transit agency, but for members of the public, in that we're going to have to all be trained on a new style of securement. And the particularly tricky part is that means that we may have some buses with different styles of securement, and we can't necessarily predict which ones will be in a particular location. So at any given point in time, someone may have to learn more than one way to potentially independently secure. And so I'm wondering if there's any other options we've looked at or explored or considered that might allow for people who currently are used to independently securing may not be able to independently secure with a hook-based system, but we'd still want to allow for a possibility to independently secure. So I know in the past we've looked at systems like there was the quantum Q-strain we piloted in some of our vehicles and similar styles of securement that might allow people through either a mechanical or button style securement option. Is that anything we're considering to look at?
Yeah. Let me pause on that great question and see if Don has, because the second bullet point really is looking at the rear facing options, and we can talk a little bit about that. So great tee up, but before I jump there, I'll let Don ask his question.
I think you should continue with that. Mine is a little off key or off point on that particular discussion. So continue with John at this point.
Oh, I was trying to deflect. No, I appreciate that, Don. But I would say yes, right? If we did pilot the Quantums, which is a rear face. I got a photo. Let me actually do that just for those who may not know what we're talking about for the Quantum. I took a photo, but it's really a rear facing restraint option that allows a passenger to really secure themselves, push a button, and the device itself squeeze the wheelchair or the mobility device to be secure and provides good securement. We've heard positive things from many people within the industry that passengers do appreciate that. When we deployed it, we were actually one of the first transit agencies that went after that. And what we've heard, and last time I was here, we quickly talked about that, is it didn't go like we anticipated. There were some failures within the mechanical components as well. They have since improved their design. And that really is a question for us as an agency, but also as a community team, to say, do we want to go after this as well, to test maybe the new and improved Quantum? Before we have that discussion point, I know that on one of our bus builds, you know, we went away to see if there's another rear-facing option. And when we had people from the community come in, what was clearly observed is with the rear-facing arm to kind of help add an additional point of securement, that wouldn't fit the majority of mobility devices. And so I believe even some people in this group were there testing it out, and it really wasn't a solution. And so we didn't go forward with those rear-facing options because it really wasn't an option to secure based upon the requirements needed for aisle width to allow people to pass when someone is secured. So I guess the question really is, as a group, is I'm supportive of testing newer and improved equipment to see if it does meet a need to allow for people. And our vehicles, at least for some of the signage internally, allows for us to test something out like that, or at least pilot. And so that might be a point of discussion, I guess, with this committee is do people have strong feelings one way or the other related to that?
Did you say you have a picture?
I did say that originally. Yeah, I did not end up sending that. So let me send it via my phone. I was looking at my folder. So thank you. And as always, as I'm doing this, Cosette did suggest something that I'm fully supportive of is, you know, we said we can invite people to our Glenwood campus and we're always open for that. But if we do want to stage a vehicle, we have the ability to stage something at the Eugene station to allow passengers to come in and test that out. And that will be something we'd want to do as well. So a double approach. If someone wants to join and come to the Glenwood campus, we're happy to host. Staging a vehicle is something we would also support as well. So I have sent the photo to myself. Let's see. Yeah. Sorry about the delay, everybody.
Well, I think it's very nimble of you to go from phone to screen. So thanks for doing that.
No, thank you for your patience. All right. And as we're looking at this one, we have four Quantums in some of our buses currently. They are in our 16200 buses. So this is a rear facing. It's a Q strength product and the Quantum. So these two arms, when someone ends up coming in, they're putting themselves their back against this padding. And right here, there's a button to push, and that ends up bringing this aisle arm out, down to then squeeze the mobility device with these two arms. So the newer ones, there's not much different from a design standpoint. It's really everything, the components within that to secure people. There was the elusive photo. So hopefully that adds information. These again are on our 16200 series buses. We have four of those and four Quantums available. All right, Don, I think we might be ready for you, unless anyone wants to spend more time on that.
Okay, this goes back to, you know, the first part where you were talking about the electric buses and our getting our air pollution down and, you know, achieving our values by principally, in this case, changing the fuel, you know, the drop in R99 fuel to the, you know, previously used diesel. Mm-hmm. And this question came up to me during the last Metropolitan Policy Committee meeting. There was a request for some funding for, I forget the acronym, air quality thing. And it occurred to me that that application was to get, you know, more efficient diesel bus vehicles. Now they're talking about trucks. And I'm just wondering if in your experience and your knowledge of using the R99 fuel, whether we could do that generally in the population of changing the diesel to R99 fuel over, you know, the broader population to improve our air quality throughout our region, if we're spending our funding on this. So I just kind of asking an opinion on your point and your experience with that fuel draw.
I would say R99 is a drop-in fuel, as you're saying. So when that comes to market from a commercial standpoint, I think is a good question. So diesel, when we transition from just our B5, which is a 5% biodiesel, which is regulated by the state of Oregon that you have to the R99, which is the renewable fuel source, which essentially removes 99% of your greenhouse gases. It was a relatively seamless process. So we chose one day to purchase it and put it in the same tanks as our previously, and actually we still had fuel, B5 fuel. And because if it's identical, really, from a chemistry standpoint, outside of one being renewable, one not, it was quick and a seamless process. So to your point, Don, I do believe that if people in long haul trucking or anyone with a diesel vehicle would choose to go R99, they would have that ability. I do not know of anybody commercially that is selling that from a regular pump.
So it's mostly acquisition possibilities then. So if the public is spending money to improve the air quality, mm-hmm. we could perhaps spend that money on making that R99 fuel more available.
Yeah, I anyway, think that like with anything, it's that supply and demand. And when people go to the fuel pump with some impacts for them individually. It's tough maybe to spend that 20 cents more just for an alternative fuel, but there are options out. There could be options. I don't know if the demand is out there for that. And it's a good question. But LTD, to your point, Don, to reduce some of our greenhouse gases and to meet some of our personal goals and meet the climate policy, that we, climate action policy that we have, we have chosen to go R99 in our fixed route fleet. And we've seen a large reduction in greenhouse gases. So, great question. And really the only additional thing I had in it is to open this up for additional questions. I see value and great suggestion, Cosette, to stage a bus down at Eugene Station. So we'll identify a date to do that. These buses we haven't purchased them yet. So they aren't licensed or registered. And so we're still going through the purchasing, even though that they're on site. So it might take some time, but we do want to communicate that outward. So we'll pick a date, find something and stage one there for a period of time. And again, if there is any desire for anybody, not only in this group, but out in the community to come to take a look to see what that will feel like when people are coming into a newer style electric buses, we're happy to accommodate that and see great value. So thank you guys. I took up more time than I anticipated. I do appreciate the lively conversation. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So next we will have Kalina Beard with a strategic business plan quarterly report. Hi, Kalina.
Good afternoon, everybody. Give me one second and I'll share my screen. Again, good afternoon, everyone. For those of you I've not formally met, I'm Kalina Beard, Director of Business Services and the project champion for LTD's strategic business plan. I believe that your last quarterly update was provided by Kim Lay, who has moved on to pursue other endeavors. As the project champion, I've stepped into the PM role, and along with Amy Reichert, who's our data guru for this project, and Nicole McCleary of TransPro, who is our consultant project leader, will continue to manage the district's strategic business plan and bring you updates. Today, we'll recap the quarter two results, discuss Q3 progress, and provide a sneak peek into what to expect in quarter four results, along with a bit of information regarding our refresh. Hopefully you've seen this slide in all of the district presentations since the adoption of the strategic business plan. It's our way of reminding everyone of the district's North Star, our mission, vision, and values. These were updated as part of the development of our strategic business plan and outline what we're striving to achieve, why we do what we do, and how we will accomplish our success outcomes. So the strategic business plan aligns our day-to-day operations with the district's mission, vision, and values. We've also leveraged the process of the strategic business plan to address organizational change management and leadership development. A case in point is the general manager's performance evaluation, which has been tied to our accomplishment of the plan. We have also continued to build a culture of ownership throughout the district, ensuring that the tactics that we undertake speak to our overall why. Lastly, through progress reporting such as the one we're providing today, we are cultivating a transparent structure for accountability to the board and our community as a whole. So to measure our progress, and just to remind you all, LTD selected 24 metrics to score across 5 strategic areas of focus, which we'll go through in the next slide. Our goal is to achieve a perfect score of 100 by 2024, since this is a 3-year plan. Scores are calculated by an independent third-party consultant, that's TransPro, based on the metrics we report each quarter. All of the tactical efforts we are undertaking are in service of achieving our key success outcomes across our 5 strategic areas of focus. So as a recap for quarter two and the last update that you received, we achieved a 45.6 out of an overall 100 points, representing 17% completion of the plan. In our Q2 status provided in February to the board of directors, we previously reported that the total points attained were 45.8. We made a correction in the area of employee engagement as a result of an update to one of the milestones. We are tracking and constantly verifying the data, and we'll continue to provide these types of updates to the metrics, similar to what you may see with the restatement of the quarterly jobs report. The report is provided on time. However, if additional information comes in following the release of the report, the prior reports are adjusted and adjustments are noted at the time of the next report. So here you see our five strategic areas of focus, or our overall goals for this triennium period. In quarter three, both the customer satisfaction and employee engagement surveys have concluded. We will have more information to report on both of those strategic areas of focus in quarter four. But what's noteworthy is that in our customer satisfaction survey, we received a total 2,277 responses. This is greater than our prior year's responses, and it far exceeds the minimum responses required to participate in the survey that's being performed by the American Bus Benchmarking Group. In our strategic area of community value, we want to establish a baseline and then improve on it by 5%. Since we've never formally measured our value to the community, we will be conducting a community value survey, which is due to be launched before the end of this month. I want to take a moment to strongly urge the members of the committee to engage your networks, as well as the agencies that you represent, to participate in this survey. We truly want to get a complete picture and as complete a picture as is possible, since we will be setting a baseline for our community value with this survey. In the area of financial health, we continue to be on track to achieving our three-year rolling financial plan. We're focusing on three things to keep the district financially healthy. They are facilitating better informed decision-making at the board level with the use of our new quarterly reports, developing reserves to mitigate the impacts of unexpected economic disruption like a pandemic, two of which have recently been adopted by the board, And lastly, focusing on continuous process improvement to increase the cost efficiency of our overall service delivery. Lastly, we've reduced our overall GHG, or greenhouse gas emissions, by 77% since beginning our sustainability program in fiscal year 18, and that currently exceeds our goal in this area of sustainability. So in quarter three, we achieved 47.7 points out of an overall 100 points, representing 22% completion. As a reminder, we did select 31 projects internally that would contribute to achieving success in our strategic areas of focus. Each tactic has clear milestones, goals, owners, and teams. These projects do not represent all of the district's activities, but solely those activities and initiatives that directly contribute to the achievement of our five strategic areas of focus. So here on this slide, you can see our achievement or our progress quarter over quarter here. And again, in quarter three, no movement was tracked in quarter two and three, no movement was tracked for employee engagement or community value, but still we're making good progress toward our overall goal of 100 points by 2024. So what's next? In quarter four, which just ended, we targeted moving the needle on all the tactics and metrics that missed their mark last quarter, namely those around customer satisfaction and employee engagement. With the completion of those two surveys, we will begin to implement recommendations based upon the results, as well as establish baselines for comparison as we move forward. As mentioned earlier, we will be conducting the community value survey beginning in this month and moving into the fall. We are nearly at the end of our refresh activities, and the refresh is a normal part or a normal part of the cadence rather, and activity related to the strategic business plan. In the first three quarters, we were really focused on initiating the process and implementing the strategic business plan for the first time. Again, with this being our first year, we didn't know what we didn't know. So the refresh has presented us an opportunity to perform a postmortem of activity in the first year and to integrate the lessons learned into our year two and three of the plan. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions and or comments. Don, I see your hand raised. And you are.
Colleen, I don't know, am I echoing? I'm getting echo, but in that, you know, employee engagement part, is it, now we had a survey that was going to be presented to the board, but was kind of put out and then withdrawn. Was there some fallacy to that information? I don't quite understand why that employee engagement part hasn't proceeded at all from where we saw that employee survey earlier.
Right, so Donna, I really can't, I don't have an answer for you regarding it having been released and pulled back. I'm not aware of a release of the survey results to the board and them having been pulled back. What I will say is that, if you recall, we've been without a director of human resources for quite a while. And so it's not that no activity was being done in that area of employee engagement, it's that we really didn't have a project lead that could champion and also report on those metrics. So again, what you'll see in the Q4 update, which will be given to the board at the August 17 regular board meeting, you're gonna see a correction, right? That I, like I stated up earlier, that verification, continuous standardizing of the metrics. And so for Q4, you will see some activity that's been reported in the employee engagement. In Q1 and Q2, we'll begin to launch some of the implementation or some of the, what will I say, efforts that we'll be taking to respond to what we heard in the employee engagement survey. So what I'd say is keep looking for it. Again, Q4, and when you get your board packet for Q4, you'll see progress having been reported under employee engagement. But then I'm sure that our director of HR, Perry Adams, will be coming to the board of directors just talking about some of the things that they'll be doing out of HR, but also with some of our other internal partners to move the needle forward and make sure that we're responding to the concerns that have been raised by our employees. Does that help, Don?
I have a trouble unmuting here. No, thank you, Colleen. I appreciate the report, and I guess we'll see it next week. I'm just jumping the gun a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Don. If there aren't any other questions, that concludes our presentation this afternoon.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I guess we are at the end of our agenda, I believe. I keep following along and so I lose the actual agenda piece, but is there anybody have anything that they would like? Oh, Cosette, your hand is up.
Yeah, I just wanted to take this opportunity, Lisa, to thank you for your service, for your time on this committee, and for stepping up to chair this committee. You've been amazing and you will be missed, as well as the folks on this committee. And, you know, just in memoriam should know how much you've been working with LTD and working in our community as part of Pearl Buck, and working with LTD over many, many years, finding creative transportation options to get children to preschool. And we've worked so closely together, and you've been such a valued member of the community and of this committee, and a great partner for us. So I don't want the opportunity to slip away without sharing that and giving you my thanks and my gratitude.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I'm sad to go, but hey, I'm excited to move to my new house. So
I feel like I just got here and you're leaving.
Marty, it wasn't you.
Okay, thanks.
It looks like if nobody has anything further, anything that you might want to discuss at a future meeting, anything like that, I think we can adjourn. Oh, John?
I'm wondering if we have a couple extra minutes if we want to provide any updates or debrief from the World Track and Field Championship events.
Oh. Lisa, is that something that you have interest in? Or time?
Pardon?
Is that something that you have time or interest in, hearing an update on the World Championship services that LTD provided?
I think that would be fine, yeah. We have quite a ways to go before this meeting would be over. So if that is of interest, I think we should talk about it. Don?
I think Cosette would be a person to know some.
Yeah,
the sure. Different question.
I'm sorry, Don, I missed part of that. Camille, if you don't mind pulling Tom over, he's prepared to give us an update on the championships.
Absolutely. Give me just one moment here.
Yeah.
Bear with Zoom's little delay here. It's been a little slow lately.
Well, in the meantime, I would just ask, did anyone to the World Championships? I don't know. Sorry, Don, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I was actually driving a bus and went over to the...
we're waiting.
So it would be helpful to have Brett as well. Otherwise, this is going to be a quick update. Brett is ready to come over as well.
He is on his way.
Excellent.
Don, you're breaking up a bit. I'm not sure. I think I missed what you were saying.
Oh, Don?
Don, yeah.
Okay.
Just going to take the time while we're waiting for Tom to just kind of ask if our grant for the connector project in Cottage Grove, is that being renewed? Is there a discussion about that? Is that a thing we can count on for a while, or are we going to be up for renewing that?
That's a great question and very timely. We're prepared to give a presentation at your April 17th meeting, Don, on that very topic. So, but generally, yes.
I would just add, Don, that we're using stiff funds for that. Is that right, Cosette? So it's actually an ongoing source that we can draw on.
And I'm sorry, it's August. I'm living in the past.
looks like Brett's here. So I'll just kick this off because Brett has the interesting information. But as part of the World Games phenomenon, we were asked to provide an airport shuttle, which we hadn't ever done anything like that before, And Brett was at the center of making that happen. And I'll let him tell you how that went. And then in addition to that service, we also added some additional service to our regular routes, particularly the MX service, and that got a lot of good use. Brett, why don't you kind of dive in?
Sure. First of all, I want to make sure we give credit where credit's due. This was a huge team effort. There were, without boring you with a whole lot of details, there were a lot of moving parts and things that changed daily, sometimes hourly. And I think Cassette really deserves to be raised up to the platform on that. Most of you don't know, but Cassette gave incredible amounts of time to this to make this work. I can't even begin to tell you how much time, including giving up vacation time with family, planned events, all kinds of crazy stuff. So kudos to her. Also, John Allen, you did a lot to help us get and acquire buses to be able to make this work. I got to tell you, it was a huge team event. These guys went way beyond what you could even expect. I wish you could understand exactly the scope of how big of a lift these guys actually did to make this work. So with that being said, LTD ended up actually fully running the airport shuttle service. That was not the original plan. And in the process, with limited time, we were able to put together a service that provided service during peak times to supplement the community as a whole. We were never into this to replace anybody. We were only here to help augment or increase the ability for people to get from the airport and support local resources. So we chose to support peak times that the airplanes were coming in and going out at the airport during the event. We started 2 days prior to the event and we ran it 2 days after the event. We focused on two zones. Those particular zones were the Gateway area and the downtown area and hotels. We would have chose a third zone, which would have been the Franklin area. Unfortunately, we just didn't have enough resources to adequately do that. So we had to focus on what we could do in the limited amount of time. And it was very well received. I'd like to say a great team. Ride Zero was part of this that helped and stepped up to help secure drivers and people to do the work. Chariots supplied buses, TriMet supplied buses, RideSource supplied buses. So again, it was a statewide thing and coordinating all that and putting it all together. We ultimately ended up giving about 570 rides during that period of time. So those are 570 rides of folks that were able to get to and fro. One of the big stories, we got a call from a group from Puerto Rico who had not a great experience of getting to the games, not because of us, but just airplane things and stuff. And they were staying at a hotel that was not in our zone. And the team got together and they said, yeah, we can take care of them. And they ran a couple buses over there. They had a group of, if I remember correctly, it was like 14 of them. We got them to the airport in time to catch their plane to get out of town. And they were extremely grateful. I think even one of our drivers, you may remember Gary Bennett, who has since retired. I think he got a group picture of him and his daughter with them, so from Puerto Rico. So that was kind of a real positive thing that took place. So again, the airport shuttles went well. LTD also provided supplements to our regular service. On the two Sundays of the event, we actually extended an extra departure in the evening to help accommodate those who were egressing from the stadium. So we added a 9:30 departure in the evening from Eugene Station. And that was, again, well used as a resource for folks to get back to their motels, to get to area restaurants, different things that they needed to get to. We also added MX service anytime that the MX was not running 10-minute service, which on the weekends, we only run 15-minute service. And then in the evenings after about 6:30, 7 o'clock, we start scaling back. So we increase those service levels during those periods of time to provide some service. Those impacts, our Saturday ridership actually on MX went up almost 50%, and the Sunday service went up almost 61% as compared to a year ago. Our weekday service increased about 10 to 12% over the course of the week. And of course, keep in mind, we're dealing with much larger numbers on the weekday. So the impacts won't be percentage-wise quite as high as they would be like on the weekends. So overall, real positive. We heard a lot of good positive comments from the community. LTD team was absolutely amazing. Our CS staff, our customer service staff was amazing. They were on point. Our marketing team, just putting stuff together last minute and different things that needed to be done to no fault of theirs. I can't say enough about how great the team was at just working together to make this actually happen. So
Brett, can you talk a little bit, in addition to the service ads that we made, we also had to detour for certain world game events, maybe just describe briefly.
Yeah, our operations team is amazing. And if you guys write our system, you already know that anyway. They are top notch, always spot on, always seem to be there whenever you need them. And Sunday and Monday, the first Sunday and Monday mornings, we had the marathon, which unfortunately, through some circumstances that hopefully we'll be able to prevent in the future, it involved actually some pretty impactful situations to Springfield Station, where barriers, just put it bluntly, the race came right across the front of the station. So it basically shut the station down for the most part. And so our operations team figured out ways to divert and run the buses, and using 126 to get people down to Eugene Station, and splitting the MX line and having people out. We even had some of our own people out there moving barriers from the team, from the event, just so that those buses could stay rolling. The 13 was impacted on MLK Boulevard. If you ride that on a regular basis, through the event in front of Autzen Stadium, from Leo Harris to Leo Harris, it was closed. So we had to detour the backside on that. The detour team did amazing. Marketing did great at getting that information out. We got very, very, very few people that were unaware that it was going to happen. So that's huge kudos to marketing. Huge kudos to the operations team, getting things signed up, getting stops notified, things like that. So even though it was expected to be quite impactful, and it was, the team really minimized the impacts on our ridership, which I'm totally impressed with. So great team. So kudos to Jake and his team over there in operations as well. So.
And I would just add that on the RideSource side, we pretty much were business as usual in terms of ridership. And I know, Pete, one of the questions that you asked early on, I think at one of our board meetings, was just around accessibility, making sure that we weren't going to be leaving people behind for a long time. I did actually monitor that. I didn't see any examples where someone was left behind for a prolonged period of time. We responded appropriately in a very timely fashion as needed. So I just wanted to provide that report, as well as thank you, Brett, for that great report and all the work that you did.
Pete, did you have something to say?
Thanks for that report. And I will say that as a rider, put my rider hat on, I was impressed with how the system continued to run very well and smoothly. And to what you just said about the marketing team about the detour. Honestly, if I hadn't heard about it from LTD, I would not have known those that race was going through that area. I would have had no idea. So you guys actually did a lot of heavy lifting as far as getting that information out to the public. And so you guys did really well. Thank you for the report.
I also would just point out that the locations where these events, or this event in particular, has been held are very different than than our venue. So places like Osaka, Moscow, Helsinki, London,
Stockholm,
Budapest, so, you know, and then Eugene, Oregon. So I'm just really proud of our community. I'm proud of LTD, but I'm really proud of our community. And it's not just the Eugene community, it was all of the outlying communities. So people's whole teams, whole country teams, rented out spaces in Crestwell and Cottage Grove and Junction City to practice. So we did a great job. I'm really proud of us.
You know, I want to add one last little thing. I want to not forget about our HR team too. they had a silent, huge heavy lift on the backside because we hired a bunch of temporary employees for this event, and they did it where we normally take 6 to 8 weeks to onboard somebody. They were onboarding people in days, including background checks. So, and drug tests and whatever else they did. I don't know all what they did over there, but somehow they managed to get us drivers and get them on board and get them there. So I'm sure there are other people. I mean, the other Heather, who's the other service planner, I mean, she picked up a lot of my duties so that I could focus on this. I mean, there's just the pushback flow too that took place. So there's just, again, I don't know. I guess I'm just very excited about what everybody did to make this happen. So anyway.
Yeah, it's quite a feather in LTD's cap what you all accomplished. So thanks so much for that and for the report. I see no other hands at this point. All right. Are we going to adjourn now? All right. Thank you so much, everybody. I've really enjoyed being on this committee, and I hope everything goes well for all of you in the future in Lane County. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Lisa.